I guess, a little confusion as to what part or what the process is on the capital budget overviews. In our effort to meet the governor's intention of going home in 75 days, we were trying to show a little activity here. We have not yet received from OMB or the executive comprehensive capital budget request for the all the agencies. But in an effort to get started on this process, we were interested in hearing from three of the departments or branches of government which have already compiled at least their wish list or their proposals for capital, and that would include the Alaska Court System, the University of Alaska, and the Department of Education priority schools that has already been developed by the State Board of Education. So those are the people that we hope to hear from today. I say hope, the university people are apparently still in the air trying to get into Juneau. Hopefully they will be here before we conclude our meeting today. I think in front of you is a sheet of paper that outlines some of the basic questions that we have asked the people today to respond to. We are hopeful of getting the comprehensive budget from capital budget from OMB tomorrow, and I think it'd be the Senate's intention that we would probably have an overview of that next week sometime, subject to Chairman Kurtula's and my scheduling, and then Chairman McLean, I assume that, you know, the House also would be hearing that. In the Senate, we're going to attempt to coordinate with the House, schedules permitting, on subsequent overviews. We will, at least speaking for the Senate, we will probably have full committee overviews of some of the major capital components, such as DOT, which we heard from yesterday, and they have tens of millions of dollars, apparently, of capital requests, and we'll probably hear that in full committee. It would be my intention to, on some of the smaller departments, some of their requests, that we would have meetings on those overviews that would be outside of our normal finance meeting times, and they would be open and available to any and all members, House or Senate, and we, Chairman McLean and I are probably working a little bit on trying to accommodate as many members as possible to for those interested in particular departmental capital budgets. Did you have any comments?
No, just that I'll concur with whatever Senator Horschel has said, and we are interested in hearing the capital. Even though we don't have a capital funding budget, it would be good to start.
Any other comments from members? We welcome the House here today, and glad we could do some things common and maybe save some wear and tear on some people that have to travel from out of town. Mr. Snowden, I see you in the audience. Are you prepared to present the court capital budget?
I don't think so.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm Art Snowden, Administrative Director of the Alaska Court System. I know we're not a popular figure at the Capitol table, a matter that has been great concern to us for many years. In fact, is the last major capital project we got was $470,000 when the fire marshal came within 10 days of closing the Fairbanks court facility, and that was back in 88. The last major capital money before that was 10 years ago when you allowed us to purchase new recording equipment. The Alaska court system, our branch of government, has not been in the capital loop. The governor does not consider our projects his problems or his priorities. And I doubt that will change under this administration. Legislators have various capital needs within their own districts that are very important capital needs that must be met. So we generally don't fit into those priorities. Because of that, the infrastructure of the Alaska court system is in desperate shape in many areas. I have only brought before you today our top six priorities of many, many building and capital project problems that we have within the state. The first one you've heard about before, and that's Anchorage. We came in with a project a number of years ago. It was not funded. Today we come in with a project that's almost 60,000 square feet smaller, and it costs $4 million more to build because prices have gone up that much since you failed to approve the other project. It's a three-phase project, and the reason we're asking for it, we are 30 feet in Anchorage where our building is from a major graben created by the 1964 earthquake. It's right across the street from our present structures. The main problem that we see within the present structures of Anchorage right now is that old district court that we're primarily talking about went through that 64 earthquake, and we have many studies, the latest done just this year, which I would be glad to provide to any legislator who wants it, That was the structural evaluation. It says exterior concrete panels are not properly connected to the walls. They're similar to the old J.C. Penney building where the falling panels cause loss of life. Does not have proper earthquake ties between slabs and walls. Could fail during earthquake. Masonry walls stiffen the first four columns, which could cause them to fail catastrophically during an earthquake. I am talking here of major life safety problems within the district court in Anchorage. We were told 5 years ago when we designed the other project that that building should be closed within 5 years. 5 years later, nothing has even started. So you're looking at a minimum of 5 years more before something could be done. It is a dangerous situation. The Chief Justice has brought it to your attention in the last three State of the Judiciaries. I once again put it on the table. It is dangerous. I know that there are problems with money in this state. And I know there will continue to be. The fire marshal, by the way, came in last month and quite apart from the structural damages, wants us to commit, if we don't get a capital project, between $500,000 and $1 million just to take care of fire code problems. Have nothing to do with the structural stability in the building. We are suggesting a three-phase expansion. The first phase would cost about $30 million. It would replace that district court building, which is 61,000 square feet, and add a total of 149,450 square feet to the Alaska court system. As you know, we're in rented space all over town. We've already documented to two legislators the life safety, the security problems that are agreed to by public safety. And this would not, I think we're over 164,000 square feet short of our present day needs. This would not even take care of present day needs, but it would at least this first phase would rid us of that district court with asbestos and structural problems and give us a bit of breathing room for today. In the future, there would be hope that a new appellate building could be built on the vacant lot across the street from the Anchorage Times. It has been vacant for a number of years. The appellate courts could be moved out of the Boney building. That space could be remodeled for use by the trial courts, and some of our work, like the administrative offices and others who are out in rented space, could be moved into that appellate building. That would be a future project. And the last part of the project would be an overall remodel of Boney, which has its own defects. Building of a extra level on the parking garage. Obviously, I realize that this legislature has many commitments and many problems. I can only bring before you the fact that we're talking about serious life safety defects when we talk about the Anchorage project. Our number two priority, Mr. Chairman, would be improving handicap access to court facilities. I ask that we start a project that would allow us to investigate some of the handicap deficiencies in court structures across the state and fix two of our most serious problems, Bethel and Seward. We do not meet the National Standards Institute Act, which this state has adopted by statute, as I'm sure many state buildings don't. But what is more discouraging is that Congress has passed the U.S. Americans with Disabilities Act of 1990, which has an effective date of 1992. As of that date, people with disabilities can bring a cause of action under Title VII, Civil Rights Act, which allows for punitive and compensatory damages and attorney's fees. You can be sure there will be many lawsuits in this state by disabled citizens of this state because they cannot gain access to the most basic facilities within this state. And I only talk about court facilities. I think the problem is much larger than us. I bring it to your attention, but I think it's someone has a basic right to get into court, and it needs to be done. We have tremendous problems. And within the document I gave you just some minor examples of the types of problems we have. We've already been sued and sued. Our clerks now get downstairs to meet with disabled people downstairs and go over any documents they want to see. If they would like to be at a trial, we go do it in City Hall. But even though this is a temporary solution, we are told that if we don't comply by 92 in Seward, we will be faced with that type of lawsuit. And the Bethel is in the same situation, and many other facilities are. So we're asking you to give us money to fix Bethel and Seward and to hire consultants to investigate the other problems within the 58 locations of the Alaska court system, so we can then come back to you and say, we're going to need more money to fix them. And I know that's what it really means, but you must be made aware of this federal act and its consequence. That is why that is our second priority. We will be faced with tremendous numbers of lawsuits.
Mr.
The third priority. Yes,
I apologize for interrupting you. Can I ask just one question on this? One of your tales of woe here that you outline the problem of people trying to get into the Anchorage courthouse and being thwarted in a wheelchair because of curbs on the to the sidewalk. What's the course relationship to the municipality of Anchorage in terms of curb cuts? There was a lot of curb cuts.
We have to pay for upgrades in front of our buildings, basically, Mr. Chairman. And also, we're trying to put in some of the doors, as you know, on the Boney Building are very heavy, and people can't get in. And we've got to get that fixed somehow with openers. And many of the spots within the courthouse are not accessible by disabled people. Some of our records that they have a right to see, and many locations. This courthouse was built in 74, long before people started thinking of the problems of the disabled. I'm sorry.
What was the answer to the sidewalk?
I believe that when a municipality does upgrades in front of a building and so on and so forth, that the owner of that building has to pay for those. The city just doesn't provide them gratis. They do have some, as you know, by the corner there. But there's nothing when somebody wants to let somebody off at the door in a wheelchair. And I mean, that's minor, but it just shows, it was meant to show an example of the types of problems that may not all be very expensive to fix, but ones that we have to catalog and that we all have to gear our mindset to start thinking about the problems of the disabled. And those problems, while they may be in our heart right now, they're going to be in law in 92, and they're going to create tremendous numbers of litigation problems in the state.
Representative Kopanen and Representative Phillips?
Yes, looking at the priority list, it seems that would be more important. Speaking of handicapped access and adding a new floor to the existing parking garage.
Here, here.
Priority might be somewhat different.
The only reason I put the Anchorage project as a whole is so you could look at it, Mr. Chairman. Certainly different parts of that project would have different priorities, but in looking at it, we thought that you would want to look at it as a whole. Our belief is phase one is the priority, and that's to get that district court out of there, and there's asbestos and structural problems. But we thought for ease of looking at the overall project over time that we put that project together. I agree with you completely that number two priority as a priority would come ahead of the last phase of the Anchorage Court Building. The third priority is court computer improvements. I say improvements because anything would be an improvement. We are the one branch of government that has not gotten any number of computers over the years, and many of you in this room know that because you've asked me questions that we'd like statistics on this and that, and I can't provide them because we're not computerized and we can't hand search over 100,000 cases that are filed in any given year and warehouses that have old cases, so on and so forth. In some of our rural and smaller courts, we have 8-bit computers. We have some minor improvements in other locations, but our two primary locations, Anchorage and Fairbanks, have no operational computer systems, and those are our two largest and busiest courts. We're trying to do something in that area, but we would very much like to have the ability to be as modern as other branches of government and have computer access and barcoding access to our files, not only for your purposes and needs, but for our management purposes in the future. Again, we've asked for this for a number of years in the budget, and the governor keeps dropping it out. I'm not suggesting this new governor, but old governor. So the judiciary is not and won't be a priority within an executive branch of government. The executive branch agencies are, and that's quite understandable from our point of view.
Representative Phillips, did you have a question?
I just want to lend credence to what Art's saying about the handicap access. Quite frankly, it's easier to get to the first room in this building than it is to get to the records in the courthouse in Anchorage. In order to get to the court, the records, you have to go downstairs in the basement. And the stairway is no better than a fire escape. And even for a physically able person, it's difficult. So I just want to, I'm there every day with my job, and I see some of these things that are happening. I think we ought to look just to pass on my own personal concerns.
Mr. Chairman, our fourth priority is Fairbanks. It's in a way throwing good money after bad. The building was built in 1964. We don't think the legislature would approve of the new building. We don't have the life safety hazards, but we have all the other hazards in that building. All exterior walls leak extensively. So we've got water all over our floors many, many times a year, which buckles walls, buckles the carpeting, creates hazards in that sense. There is only 2 inches of insulation in the Fairbanks building. This is the city that goes to 50 below in the winter. If you put an infrared camera on that building, it'd be one big red blob. So you're basically running heat out the walls in that building. We need insulating panels. We need to we need to solve this water problem. The heating and the air conditioning ventilation systems, air circulation is poor to non-existent in Fairbanks. Building, it doesn't work at all. Again, we're talking about a building that was built in 1964 and hasn't been upgraded pretty much since that time, except when the fire marshal threatened to close us. And that's when we put in a sprinkler system so we could put more water on the floors of the building. But it is a terrible building. because the heating doesn't work, everybody plugs in these space heaters, which overload the electrical system, and as the, we get brownouts, and our recording equipment shuts down, it's really a mess. And I can go through all the safety issues, but I've put them in this overview for you, many of them. We're not asking for a tremendous amount of money just to bring this up to human standards. We really think it's a very important thing to do. And as I say, the only reason it reaches a low priority, four, not that it's not very important, but these other things are more critical that we put before it. Priority five is our electronic recording equipment. As you know, about 10 years ago, you allowed us to get new electronic recording equipment. That's out of date, hopelessly out of date. But we're not asking for new equipment because we don't think there's anything on the market that would justify $1.5 million investment into new equipment. We ask that we be allowed to upgrade the equipment we have. It is my view that within some certain amount of time, there will be electronic recording equipment that can do voice identification and come up with transcripts almost for you, which would be a great saving of time to the litigants of this state. I think that's still 5 or 6 years away, at a minimum, that technology. But there is already some voice recognition capability in this country. I think we should try to wait for that as our next leap in that area. But one problem we do have, radio stations have proliferated within this state over the last 10, 15 years. What does that mean to us? RFI interference on our recording equipment. The radio stations interfere with our recording, and they're on towers in Anchorage at the Hilton, and they're in Fairbanks, and they're in many places in Bethel and even Juneau. We are getting interference in our recording, and one of the major parts of this project is to do a RFI project, which would shield our recording equipment so that we can avoid this interference. It is the official record in this state. We are held up as a model in the United States. I testified before the United States Congress on this issue some 8 years ago in front of Senator Dole's committee, and Congress approved the federal courts and Congress going to electronic recording, mainly based on the type of testimony on how this equipment works and saves money in the state of Alaska. Court reporters are much more expensive, as you know, than electronic recording, as you use it yourself in your branch of government. We want to keep this technology, but we'd like to be able to better get better phone patches to save rural and other litigants money so they can participate over the phone. We'd like to do RFI shielding. We think it's important for the integrity of the record of the Alaska court system. Last but not least, Mr. Chairman, is Kenai. We've asked for this project for a number of years. There certainly is an alternative, and that would be a lease purchase such as we did in Palmer. But when the Kenai building was built in 1973, there were 1,700 cases filed in that courthouse. Right now, the average case filing is 7,400 cases. So a sevenfold increase in the caseload of that building since it was built. The staffing has grown from 6 employees to 21 employees. There is not space in that building. As you know, you approved the second judgeship for Kenai because of the tremendous caseload. We have asked the public defender and DA to move out of the building under our statutory authority to do so. We've given them 1 year notice toward that end. I somehow doubt, looking at the budget picture, that money has been placed in their budgets anywhere. I would hope it would be inserted because we have no space in the Kenai building. It is a tremendous problem for conducting orderly and efficient building judicial process in that town. These are just six highlights, Mr. Chairman. I could have given you pages of projects. Our buildings all over the state are in disrepair. In Juneau, we don't own this building that we're in, but the top floor is separated, and we've got inside scuppers that go under the roof that drain the water out. And so every year, as that water freezes to ice, it pushes the top floor farther apart. We've asked DOT to fix that. You're just destroying the buildings of the state. They have got to be maintained and brought up to date. I'm not saying you as the legislature. I'm saying that the lack of maintenance. That is not the kind of problem that I'm facing with these major projects. I would be glad to answer any questions, Mr. Chairman, that the committee might have.
Mr. Snowden, if I might just start here. One of the questions we had directed was what the status of last year's projects were, and I see that we didn't fund any projects
That's
for
correct.
You last year. At the same time, as I recall, Governor Cooper had put in his capital request a number of major maintenance projects for various state agencies, and much to our dismay, those all survived, and of course the projects that we put in were all vetoed. what happened in that process, either by the executive last year or by the legislature, that somehow your major maintenance projects were not part of other agency major maintenance projects?
Mr. Chairman, my good friend, as I told you yesterday, Ramon Barnes once remarked that we split the capital budget between the three branches of government, the House, the Senate, and the governor. And that's sort of the way we feel about it, that we've been lost in this process. We do not ever make the governor's priority list to any level. We gave him just about all of these projects last year. The only one that made his capital budget was the computer project. I had assurances that wouldn't drop out. It was cut in the last go-around. We still are without major computers in our major systems. I'm at wit's end. I don't mean to beg this committee, but that's where we're coming to. We have to do something with the infrastructure of the court system.
Representative Boyer.
Well, Mr. Chairman, thank you. That leads me to my question. With a $150 million proposal by the governor that we've yet to see that has to do specifically with deferred maintenance and capital types of improvements, are you involved with that process? Are you hopeful that some of the buildings like the Juneau courthouse over here would be included in DOT's portion of that?
We are not involved in the process, Mr. Chairman. I am told by the grapevine of this list, which we gave to the governor, that the only two that I think might have made it are the handicap access project and the electronic recording project. And I don't even know that they made it. That's just the rumors. We have not been called to defend any of this, to give them more information on any of this. We are not in the loop.
Thank you.
Join the crowd.
Representative Copeland.
On the computer project, one of the things that the legislature, and for that matter, public wants are better information about what the reality of the court results are, both in civil cases and in the court reform movement. It was quite clear that the people who were pushing court reform were using Reader's Digest statistics, and yet we had a very difficult time finding what sort of settlements were the case in Alaska. And I understand that in criminal court, one district court doesn't know what another district court is doing. There's a lack of communication, largely because of the lack of a uniform reporting system and also cross communication. Perhaps if you could come up with a better idea of how you're going to be programming the kind of statistics and the kind of input that we will be getting to make public policy decisions from the entire computer program may fly a lot faster.
Mr. Chairman, I understand the various needs of the legislature. Some of our problem, even with computers, to report to the level that we'd get a question on from the legislature would be almost impossible because all that has to be entered. There are only about 500 non-judicial employees in our whole branch of government. And as I told the operating subcommittees yesterday, that under the governor's proposal, we'd have to fire 22% of those employees. So I don't know how we even keep ourselves running. We're 9 months behind in Fairbanks and child custody investigations. We do have a statewide information plan, but it collects only the base information we need to manage. It certainly doesn't give you the information you need to make intelligent decisions here. With a computer system, I would hope we could provide you with some of the type of data you need. I would hope to be able to ask people to enter cases in at least some instances in the criminal instances by statute so I could cross-reference back. I still may not be able to give you the tort questions, answers you want, because we don't have hundreds and thousands of tort cases, and to pull them out of the civil mix would be very difficult. And
they get entered while they're...
But many cases have many issues, Mr. Chairman, and we have range 8 clerks entering them, and that is a problem. We are the lowest paid branch of government, and only because we depend very heavily on range 8 and 10 clerks. Not because you haven't been fair with us, not because you haven't given our employees pay raises when you give other employees raises, but the type of people mainly staffing the Alaska court system are range 8s and 10s, not 20s and 25s. We don't need those people to process paper. I understand the problem that Representative Copeland is bringing forth. I can only commit to you that if we get computers, I will try to design a system that will give you much more information than you have now. I will not sit here and ever commit that we will have everything at our fingertips that you want. I just would not be able to do that.
Well, we sure appreciate the problems faced by trying to have range 10 people do complicated work. We have the same problems. Senator Couture?
Yeah, we said yesterday we suffered the same knowledge and problems. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You haven't been privileged to be objective, particularly. You have to be subjective because you've got a limited amount of time and a lot of problems. I frankly, and as an aside, would say I'd be a lot more interested in you figuring out ways to keep me out of court rather than making it easy for me to get there. What I worry about is the continuing stories of the rural areas where you haven't provided the facilities, even on a temporary basis, for the circuit courts and so on. People stand on the hall for hours and hours in Dillingham, waiting to talk to defense or prosecution, days sometimes, and probably didn't even chair. I think you ought to at least look to some of these problems and present them to us, and maybe your briefing does that, but I'm hard-pressed walking into the magnificence of the Anchorage court system, the annex, with the huge chandeliers and beautiful space. And I know Sir Christopher Wren probably, or his ghost is involved, but to some extent that falls on deaf ears when I look at some of the other lack of facilities, not only in the court system, but schools and so on, where we have to prioritize. Now, as I say, you were subjective. I don't know that I'm objective, but do you have anything going on what court needs might be in a few of the key rural communities that hold a trial court and you just don't have facilities at all, or you don't rent facilities or whatever they are of any competence or value, I'm told.
Mr. Chairman, I think there's some misinformation here. We have a $7 million budget that's in contractual. There are only two parts of that. There's no discretionary funds. There are jury fees and rent. We are in Barrow with a Superior Court judge. We are in Kotzebue with a Superior Court judge.
I'm not saying you don't have a facility, but I'm just talking about the areas in which you have.
We have 58 magistrate posts around this state. We have, since I've been with the court system, taken them out of their kitchen, where they'd been left because of lack of funds in this state, working off their kitchen tables, and every single one of them has an office in a courtroom. They all have the code. They all have electronic recording. I don't believe that we have a palace in the state. I think the good senator knows there's no chandeliers in Christopher Wren's in Anchorage. But the fact is that we care very much about rural Alaska. We have kept our commitment to be out there. And the reason people wait 2 days in Dillingham for public defenders and DAs is because public defenders and DAs aren't meeting with them, not because there's not a facility there, because there is. And it's a decent facility, especially when you consider there's no judge in Dillingham. We fly judges out there to hear cases. We have regional facilities.
I said on the circuit court, people are sitting in the halls trying to communicate to defense and prosecution, and you don't have much facilities, and maybe they're not available, but I'm not sure that you've concentrated any effort on that either.
Certainly,
I'm not talking about your permanent court systems. I'm talking about the areas of the circuit rider.
Mr. Chairman, again, we send judges out across the state. One of our problems right now is on Alaska. Very crowded town. Finding court space is almost impossible. The regional corporation finally agreed to renew our lease, but they weren't going to. Many communities, we can't find space. If we want to find space, it is non-existent. However, we circuit ride throughout this state and provide the judges where they are needed, and therefore, I don't know what else we can do unless you want to build us facilities across the state. I can't even get anybody to maintain the ones we got.
I think you ought to express point of view on upgrading the rural ones right along with the fact that you're going to provide, even if we don't do it, at least that information knowledge ought to be before us from your system rather than from DAs and so on. That's all I'm saying. I recognize we might ignore it. We ignore a lot of other responsibilities too, but there's also prioritization of some sort. That is really what I was driving at.
Mr. Chairman, the Senator's right. There's certainly a need for improvement throughout our whole system. All that I've been able to provide here are our top most six critical needs. However, in providing this space, as the Senator correctly says, the DAs and DDs are using our space, and possibly that we should get offices for them out there to relieve this burden, because there are burdens throughout rural Alaska. But we think we're the one branch of government that's gone to rural Alaska and said we have a commitment to put judges in there and magistrate posts throughout rural Alaska, and we believe strongly that justice must be equal for all our citizens, and that we, as the third branch of government, must be in all parts of Alaska.
Representative McClain.
Thank you. I have a question on deferred maintenance. What is the current cost for the existing facilities in Anchorage for deferred maintenance?
Madam Chairman, I don't have that answer off the top of my head. Can I get it to you in writing within the next 48 hours?
I would like that. Thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Snowden or on the court system?
Mr. Chairman, just a brief question with regard
to the district court building. Do I understand that you are talking about basically getting rid of the district court building, starting from scratch, and that the phasing idea is the first phase would simply replace the existing square footage of the district court building, or would it significantly increase?
The district court building, Mr. Chairman, is 61,000 square feet. Phase one would give us 149,000 square feet. Without knocking down the district court, our documented space shortage in Anchorage at this point in time is 164,000 square feet. So that would let us get most of our people out of rental space, not all of our people. It would provide more space than is available in district court today, and it would knock down, hopefully, that building. But it would not provide for any long-range uses. That would be what we need today. Mr. Chairman, the number that we have presented to do phase one of this project is $39,252,122.
Senator Curtillo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, we hear conflicting reports of the hazards of or potential problems of earthquakes, and you indeed brought them up. There are also conflicting, I understand, conflicting soil analysis and so on for that area that the present court's in would think, and they're in argument all the time, but I would think that before the legislature would go for funding and reconstruction or real addition to that immediate area, they'd want to be absolutely certain that we wouldn't have the earthquake problems that we had in 64. I know you bought or the city purchased space or the state purchased space away from that area for the, I suspect, the Boney building. But I'm not sure that if you put anything of substance that you ought to be putting it in that location. I'm not certain about that. And why build it if it's, no matter what you do, it wouldn't protect against that which you just testified?
Mr. Chairman, it's an excellent point raised by Senator Cotulla. In my view, I don't think there's any place in Anchorage that's safe. Let's start with that. But I know of no conflicting studies as to the district court's viability. I can give you three that show that it's a dangerous building. I know of absolutely no studies that contradict that. That if we tried to move out of downtown, I think there would be political screams across the state. However, Mr. Chairman, if this legislature wanted to build us a building elsewhere in the downtown area and we're willing to fund it to replace the space we have in the west end of town, I'd take it in a minute. That's not my priority. But I would say Woodward and Clyde and Professor Shaw, who's the head of the Bloom Earthquake Center at Stanford University, and Woodward and Clyde is probably the top firm in the world in earthquake studies, have both studied the site that we are discussing and have come up with the construction methods to build there and say it is safe within those constraints. I'm not an expert. I can only tell you what the experts tell me.
What would the difference in construction costs be to stabilize, without any doubt whatsoever, that area?
Couldn't stabilize the area, Mr. Chairman. What we would do is build with the most modern construction techniques. You'd build a raft under the building.
Yeah.
That would prevent a tip over and the loss of lives. I would say that the property next to our building did not move at all in the 64 earthquake. But there are certainly some buildings.
It's a very modest building in here. Next.
Yeah, but I would suggest that there are certainly earthquake building techniques that would have to be employed in that area, and I concur with Senator Cotulla, but I would suggest to replace the whole Alaska court system there, which would include the Boney building and move us out of town, would be a much larger cost to the state. But I share your concerns overall, Senator Cotulla, although we have the best minds in the world saying this is how you construct, and they've drilled holes all over the area, and they say it's safe, and Mayor Knowles had a group look at it, a technical group, and they concurred with the building of the types of building we designed there, and these were engineers and earthquake types of people. I don't think any area in Anchorage is safe. As our expert, Professor Shaw from the Bloom Laboratory, said, if I came over a hill and saw Anchorage in its streams, I would say never build here. But that's not what we're faced with. We're faced with a city. And within those constraints, we can build safely.
Well, the economic royalists of the area reconstructed that lower part of 4th Avenue at horrendous cost to the federal government to protect a few dollars of the property, so I know what you're talking about. Nonetheless, maybe you ought to get a couple Armenian architects to advise. Excuse me.
Just to follow up on the point on the cost, obviously that's something that kind of stops us up short, the large price tag, and we've had debates over the past on alternatives to that. We were trying to do some figuring here, and it maybe we're wrong. It looked like if you're adding 140,000 or 142,000 square feet and you're paying nearly $40 million for it, sounds like about $1,000 a square foot construction. Is that square foot?
We would also be knocking down 61,000 square feet at the same point in time. Our construction costs, I believe, are $198 a square foot that we're looking at. It would be in the detail backup, and I would be glad to give to any member of this committee who would want a very thick and extensive book on the Anchorage project, space needs, and those types of things. I certainly didn't duplicate them for the committee, not thinking that there would be great interest of all the members in this, but I would be glad to duplicate it for anybody who wants it.
Maybe, what's your answer if, in a very simplistic way, a person said you can rent space in Anchorage, pretty good space for $2 a square foot per year, and if you're spending $200 per square foot for construction costs, and, you know, that sounds like 100 years amortization. I mean, what's...
Mr. Chairman, it's $187.99. It's on page 21 of 28 of the backup materials in your capital budgets. But my answer is, court space is not office space. It's a specialized space that has cells for holding cells. It has soundproof courtrooms. It has a specific juror and prisoner movement areas. You can't rent space. That takes care of unique and specific court function. Just like you can't rent space to build a high-security jail, in my view. You just can't get down to the hillbilly and say, I'm going to have a high-security jail here. It's not constructed to do that. Court space is specialized space for a specialized function, and that's why I don't go out and rent space. We certainly have gone out to rent space for non-judicial function. My offices are in rental space. We asked this legislature last year to move the custody investigators out of the building. We will be asking, as more problems exist, to move more non-judicial people out of the building. But in the long term, that destroys the efficiency of the court system. I've got somebody in this office on this side of town and this office over here. If you expect us to run with 500 non-judicial employees and process over 100,000 cases, you have to allow us some efficiencies.
Other questions of Mr. Snow? If not, thank you very much. And we'll undoubtedly be following up in smaller groups and looking at your budget. And we would hope that we could accommodate your travel plans so that you could save some money. And,
we're certainly trying to do that, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you very much. I don't see members from the University of Alaska here. Are they still in the air, or is anybody here from the University of Alaska? If not, I think what we'll do, do we have representatives from DOE here, Ms. Milner? Can we start with you and switch the schedule? Are you prepared, or are you still waiting, Mr. Hull from downstairs? Ms. Milner. If you could both identify yourselves for the record there.
My name is Susan Miller. I'm the facilities coordinator for the Department of Education.
And of course, solid in all honesty. Connor was beginning in here about 50s stuff.
Ms. Miller, I guess what we were looking for today was the presentation of the new HB 37 system and the list as derived from that process through the Board of Education. We recognize in addition that you will, because your department has other functions like museums, that you may have additional capital construction requests coming through the operating budget or through the governor's capital request, and we're assuming that we will hear more from the department later on, more of its capital needs or within its own jurisdictions. But today, if you could very briefly maybe recap the process for the how we got to this list, that would be very helpful.
Okay, certainly I can do that. The information that we just passed out to you there are four things in there. The first is a summary of the HB 37 process. There's a copy of the statute, a copy of the regulations that were promulgated by the department, and then the orange sheet was the final list that we came up with. This was the first year that we did it, and it was real interesting, and it took a lot of time. There was a lot of things to work out. Briefly, the school districts had to submit their capital improvement request by the 1st of September. We required a six-year plan, a description of their fixed asset inventory, a description of their preventative maintenance plan, and proof of insurance. And we got all of those things. Amazing. using the criteria in the law, we put each of the projects into one of seven categories. I'm not going to call them priorities because pretty soon everything is priority. Health, life, safety, unhoused students, protection of structure, code upgrade, operational cost savings, functional upgrade, and other. At that point, when they were in the seven categories, we used the guidelines that are included to rate each project individually. There were a team of three people who did that, myself, Tom Ryan from the department, and Jim Coulter from the department, took each of the packages and went through them looking for the information in these guidelines. We gave them a point value and then put them on the list based on the number of points that they received. For example, if something was placed in priority one, we looked at information from other regulatory agencies besides ourselves, the Fire Marshal's Office, DEC, some kind of engineering report saying the building was structurally unsound, kind of a third party to back up what the school district was claiming. We went out to the site in all cases except one, I believe, on priority one. We looked at the district's ranking of the project, where it was, generally they submitted more than one. If it was a high priority, they got points for that. We looked at a district's ability to provide services through alternate facilities, whether there were other buildings in the community that could be used for schools, whether they could continue to use that building, how serious the nature of the problem was, based on the information that we received from recognized experts, whether or not they had received any funding previously, because we didn't want half-built buildings out there, and if they were suggesting or recommending that they get a new school, we were looking at a life cycle cost analysis, whether or not it would be more cost-effective over a long period of time to build a new building or to upgrade what was already there.
Ms. Miller, I wonder if I could just stop you there for a second. Senator Kurtulis?
Just two or three things. The qualifications for the three people that did the work, I'm a little bit curious. And two, what do you mean recognized experts? Do you have anything on those two subjects?
The
chairman wants to give us a backup and substance to the decision-making capability. And, you know, I have to admit I have a point of view about House Bill 37 that I don't want to see come to fruition. I want to see it work.
The three people that reviewed the projects were myself. I've been with the Department of Capital Projects for 8 years and have been to all the sites, have worked with the school districts and with the grant program. Tom Ryan is an educational administrator for the department. He was assistant superintendent at Bering Straits for a while. He's been a superintendent in Washington. He's been facilities coordinator before me and has experience with school construction and school facilities. The other person was Jim Tozer. He's been in capital projects for schools since, I believe, 1982. And before that was a rural superintendent. We've all been involved with the capital project process for a number of years, and Tom was involved in the development of HB 37.
Well, do you have any detail on selection written out that we could observe and see, that like a regulatory directive, we could see if you're following guidelines, or do you kind of deem from your collective experience who gets on the list and who doesn't get on the list before you're through? I'm just curious about this.
Excuse me, I didn't hear the last part of the question.
Okay, how did the three of you arrive? Do you have a series of regulations that you follow and written up into the Okay.
I thought it was, you know, that the law itself was pretty self-explanatory on.
We'll bring you in the Senate subcommittee back before us undoubtedly anyway, so I won't belabor that. What about the recognized experts?
Well,
who are they?
That was probably the wrong term. What we required was a report from a third-party regulatory agency who's got, you know, some kind of engineering background. Nobody in the department has that kind of background. We're administrators, we're not architects and engineers. So we look at, when I say recognized experts, we look at people who do who do those kinds of tasks, who do structural evaluations, who do, like the fire marshal's office, you know, who goes in regularly and makes an evaluation of the building and what codes it's meeting or codes it's not meeting. Like the Department of Environmental Conservation, who goes out and does checking to see the condition of waters and sewer systems in the buildings, evaluates those kinds of things. We ask for those kinds of reports.
Two quick further questions. And this is a little aside, but will you ever set up a system of recommendations, at least to individual school districts, on particular type structures that meet a particular type, number of classrooms and so on, and these? Obviously, every foundation will be different because you have different types of foundation materials needed in given areas. But will we ever make suggestions that will reduce the architectural fees and time and so on for a given type of school that's needed for X amount of students? Or are we going to get into that at all?
I think what you're talking about is like a prototypical school building.
Precisely.
Okay. Some of the districts are actually doing that within the district. Fairbanks.
We have something that works and is proven workable. It just seems like it would be cost effective.
I don't think that we have the expertise in the department to say that this is the school that you're going to build because you have this many kids. We have guidelines on the number of square feet they're allowed.
Well, you have vested interest among the architects and engineers not to do that, and they absolutely rebel at anything like that. And that's, I understand that. But it's still elementary that some prototype schools ought to be going. I just wondered if you touched it. My next question, though, is the one that I'm most interested in personally. And that is, I would guess that on priority needs for the top 10, they're at the very high end of some kind of a graph that you mentally design, at least, that says these schools are the top 10 needs based on all the criteria we bundled in and we made the decision. Now, I see a straight line graph, though, that you may or may not include. What about other than burning or loss to fire or earthquakes or floods, so there is a school completely destroyed, what do you do when a criteria that comes into you, or do you have a plan for it, that shows a school district going up like this, and right up here there is an immense need for schools at the very top, and it's right about here. And all of a sudden, the need's way down here, but 2 or 3 years later, it's right back up here again, so you get kind of like this in a need. How do you pick up for that gap and all of a sudden put back in a prioritization that competes with the top 10 based on very recent and new experiences of, say, population impact?
Well, what we would look at right now is...
How do you ever get on this list if you have an emergency that wasn't predictable during the time of construction of this list?
I'm not sure that you do. When we're looking at...
Right, that's the answer.
When we're looking at student enrollments, we look at their five-year enrollment, at a district's five-year enrollment projection, and we put all the priority twos on the list based on what the district is predicting in 5 years. We don't do it based on
that's,
year
that's
to year.
An area we want to test. I just wanted to know. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Representative Phillips, did you have a question?
Well, I just had one question. I know the Anchor School District's got a problem, you know, right now. Were there any other school districts that faced a similar situation, or did all the other 55 school districts comply?
Well, the rest of them all complied by the September 1st deadline. There were a couple of school districts that did have projects they tried to submit late, and I said that we couldn't accept them. There were three other districts that submitted projects after that deadline, and I have them on file, but they're not on this list.
What was the, I'm trying to determine this too, what was the problem with the Anchor School District, short of not submitting the list? I mean, did you notify them by mail, all of them begged them and plead, and all this other stuff?
The Anchorage School District was involved in the development of regulations. They were involved in the development of these guidelines for ranking projects within categories. Everybody was notified in writing more than once, and the Anchorage School District was also notified when the deadline was near that we hadn't received anything from them.
Senator Hoffman.
Maybe a little response to Senator Padula's inquiry. The priority ones are health, life, safety. And I think that House Bill 37, I had several discussions with Representative Swackhammer when he had worked on the legislation, was to try to work on a priority that would address the health, life, safety of existing structures. And priority two is related to the unmet needs of students that do not have present classrooms, and I think that that is the reason for the different priorities.
Representative Navarro?
Yeah, I'd like to get an evaluation, if I could, for each of the priority one schools. Your criteria, what do you consider? I mean, it's nice to say life, health, safety. Some of the things that are considered life, health, safety by the department and their evaluations are things that are considered normal maintenance by school districts who have to pay for the cost of upgrading and maintaining their own schools. So I'd like to get an evaluation from you of the criteria. I'm looking in your priority type and the points you evaluate, and there seems to be at least a certain number of points within the system that are fairly subjective rather than objective determinations under some type of a system for ranking.
Okay, well, first of all, the system, the priority type system, we worked on that with all the school districts. So they were all invited to participate in developing these guidelines because, like the gentleman's committee, we wanted something that was going to work. We didn't want to just throw it out there and say, this is the way we're going to do it with the department. And we understand that regardless of what criteria we use, there's always going to be some subjectivity. So we tried to put together a system that was as objective as possible by looking at things that other people had done.
I'm Tom Ryan. I'd like to point out that in response to your question and Senator Curtula's question too, to some degree, that the burden of proof in this process is on the district. It's really a burden of persuasion. And to the extent that some types of problems with buildings are labeled as life-threatening or life safety issues, we have to require that somebody who's qualified to make those judgments give us that supportive documentation before we make the judgment to put them in a priority one as a category within which to be ranked.
Maybe that, after Senator
Curtula, that reduces some of the subjectivity that you're speaking of.
Maybe after Senator Curtula asks a follow-up question, we could go to the appeals process and describe that, where you can maybe provide additional information. Senator Curtula.
Well, it's been my 30-year experience that if a governor or a commissioner has a priority, you're going to have it on there, whether you believe it or not. One. Two, again, and this was triggered by a member of the Finance Committee of the House, but for priority two or three, wherever you fit in for new construction, I'd like to have a more comfortable feeling that you could predict in advance of having to put up tents for kids on the beach that you're going to have some opportunity to build new schools if, in fact, the legislature is willing to fund an X amount for all school construction statewide. And there's got to be some kind of, I've got to have a feeling myself that there is an opportunity there before, again, you have no space, you have a wild situation, and the people go around the system to beat the devil out of the legislators out in the front lines, and the governor, et cetera, and the school board. And so they get on the list for construction. It's something you're going to have to get involved in and assure us, at least assure me a little bit, that it's worked out here. There's no options that I can see for school districts that rely on the Kenai Peninsula, Anchorage itself. Maybe there's enough political clout there, numbers game, but both sides of Anchorage, Matsu, and some of our other communities, to build in this system. Yet I have no feeling that we'll ever get anything there except for 100% local participation. And, you know, I don't suppose there's any fairness to that either. Well, I'll get off of my
I would just remark that despite some of our individual objections, what Ms. Miller has been describing is the process that we ourselves put into law.
It was my objections at the time, but maybe he can come up with amendments to the law or at least assure me the law is going to work, which I'm absolutely positive right now there's a question about. That's all.
Representative Phillips.
Just a comment, I mean, to thank what Senator Trill is talking about. I mean, we do, those of us from Anchorage, have that liability, and they're trying to get us to amend this law to get the Anchorage priorities on. And that's just an example of what Senator Trill is talking about. Now, this guy like me from the Anchorage area is having a difficult time explaining this to people back home. So He does have a point. I agree.
Representative Brown and then Representative Larson. People, just the opportunity.
Are all the projects in listed in priority one there to avert imminent danger or correct life-threatening situations? Every one of them has a life-threatening situation. Is that true?
Every one of them has a situation that is potentially dangerous. I would say, I can give you some examples in Shefornick. I think the river now is about 3 feet away from the back of the building. It's eroding very quickly there. In Ammonic, the kids are going to school in old warehouses, generator sheds, and certainly any number of buildings, 7 buildings on that site, most of which are not, don't have any fire protection at all. Nome Belts, a number of years ago, the fire marshal said that unless they started repairing that building, making repairs to that building, that he was going to just shut it down. Anyway, Gildersleeve Floating School is sinking. It's one of the ones that they use in Southeast Island School District to move through the logging camps. And I've been down there, and it's ankle deep in water right now, the float that the school building is sitting on. It's sinking, and it's being some kind of worms or something are eating, and I have that documentation back there. So, in almost every one of them, every one of the life safety ones, there's a situation here that is a dangerous situation.
None of them are falling under, I'm looking at section 16 of the House Bill 37. And it says, first priority, projects to avert imminent danger. Second priority, projects in their final phase as of January 1989 that have received more than $2.5
million.
Is the Ketchikan School specifically on there because it's life-threatening or because it was started prior to this?
No, it's on there because of the asbestos problem, because of the problems with the electrical and heating systems, because of the numerous code violations that are there, many of which are dangerous.
With respect to the point Senator Petula brought up earlier, did you use a point system, and do you have a written record of the ranking of how this list was arrived?
Absolutely. Yes, we did. We have all the score sheets that, from the people who evaluated them. We have all of that on file.
Representative Larson.
Yeah, mine is kind of a general question, Mr. Chairman. And the terminology, I guess, life safety, bothers me some. In a document, something like this, when we say a term on life safety, what liability are we exposing ourselves to? Something that, in other words, would insurance cover it? Would we be open for civil suit?
I have no
idea.
There's a lawyer right there. He found it.
It seems to me if we're using the terminology life safety, that we only have one choice to use correction when our closest school is down. And if we're not doing that, then it can't be life safety unless it's something else.
Where was I? I would like to have Ms. Miller be able to get through her presentation of the process here. If we could hold some comments at least until she goes through the whole process, then we can get back to specific questions.
Okay, what we did this year was we put the projects, before even the hearing process started, we put all the projects on a courtesy list, for lack of a better word, and we sent it out to the school district, and we said, okay, this is what we've done, and we gave them an opportunity to comment on their placement on the list and submit additional information before we ever went to any of the hearings. And they did that. So we sent out, there was notification sent out about a hearing. A public hearing for Greve School District, so it was held November 30th in Juneau. Out of 145, I believe, projects that eventually ended up on the list, there were only 6 projects that were addressed in the hearing. Of those 6, 3 of them were changed, and 3 of them were left where they were. Then there's a formal hearing process that we're involved in now. There was only one district with one project who went through the formal hearing process. The hearing was yesterday in Anchorage. The planes didn't get in. I don't know what happened up there. So I felt comfortable that, with this many projects, to only have one that went to a hearing, that there was that the system was working. So that's where we are now with it. This is the final list, and we've been through the hearings. We'll see what the decision of the hearing officer is. That's next. He'll give it to the state board. The state board will make a recommendation whether or not to accept it, their decision. And I guess at that point in time, if they decide, you know, if the school district is still unhappy, then
it will be confirmed. Yeah.
It'll go back to the hearing officer.
I wonder if you could. Can you just summarize then the dollar amounts for your various priority groups?
Okay, they're at the bottom. They're 51,639,000 in priority one. 8 million in the aspirant priority, which is the stuff that's taken care of in section 16. There's two schools that have been phased for a number of years and haven't received funding.
Take care of where? Section 15, did you say?
Yeah, there's section 16 in chapter 5 says any school that received more than, I don't remember the dollar amount, $2.5 million of funding before January of 89 would be funded after priority ones and before priority two, and that's what that Glen Allen Secondary and Mountain Village Phase 2 are. That's why they're not, the priority type is an aspirant.
It's yet to be funded, but it's in that category.
It's in that category. There's 121 million in priority two, or 120,098,600 in unhoused students. The state is growing. We're in touch with the state demographer on where it's growing and why, you know, what's going on. In each one of these areas, we've checked with the Department of Labor to find out, you know, what the growth trends are, what the population trends are, to ensure that the areas, at least through them, and they are the state demographer, are continuing to grow, so we can avert, at least to some extent, building a school in an area that's not going to, the community's not going to be there. Priority three, which is protection of structure, there's 21,698,000 in. Priority four, which is code upgrade, there's 39,253,800. Priority five, which is operating cost savings, is 106,400. Priority six is 51,502,000. That's functional upgrades. And there's 2,846,000 in other.
I wonder if you could give on the Xerox sheets that we had the total line on the first page is kind of obscured. What was that exact total for priority one?
51,639,300.
Were there further questions? I know Representative Phillips, did you have further questions or comments, Representative Kopanen?
I wondered where the asbestos removal programs, I see that some of them are listed under priority one. Does that clean up the remaining asbestos removal problems in the state? Or in capital plan, whatever?
All of them that are presenting a health hazard. There are a number of asbestos projects, I believe, in priority four. Basically, those are the ones in priority four, which is code upgrade, and there is no code that says you can't have asbestos in buildings. It was sort of one of those points where you put it, are floor tile, ceiling tile, things that aren't presenting a hazard to the building occupants.
So that fits the federal requirements. In other words, are we going to be in compliance with the federal law on asbestos?
Yeah.
Some of the people asked about the priority listing and how you determine them. Are you going to include a more detailed analysis of that or outline of that in your list of code in the future? It's very, very general in here.
It is.
You know, nobody
is.
Knows. That's why we're asking the question.
I think at some point in time we may do that. We didn't want to do it the first year. We wanted to go through the process and see how it worked before we put anything into regulation because it's very difficult to change regulations. So we thought we'd go through, we'd see how it worked. We'd go back to the same committee people that we've been dealing with on the regulations and on these guidelines. Once the process was gone through to see what their feelings were about it, what needed
that's
to be changed, what needed to be amended, and at some point in time when we had a process that people were generally satisfied with, then we would put it in regulation. That was the thought. I don't know that we'll really do that. But that was.
I think the concern that I have been expressed, we would be assured that everybody's seen the same sheet of news. That's the same.
Representative Boyer, did you wish to say?
No, thank you.
On the topic of organization or descriptions, I'd recommend just if you have an opportunity to redo the sheet, maybe have a summary sheet with, where you have lay out the totals for priority one, priority two, and then maybe just describe what is priority one, what are the priority two, like the category descriptions would be helpful. Other questions of Ms. Miller or Mr. Ryan? Senator Hoffman.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Not a question, but a comment, I guess. In some of the philosophy that was talked about when this legislation was passed was to try to get some of the politics out of construction of schools and whether that has been accomplished or not. I think the legislation of House Bill 37 has gone a long way to do that. One of the problems that seems to be coming up is that a lot of the projects that are listed are in rumblings that I've heard in the halls are in the fact that a lot of the schools are in rural Alaska. And I might comment briefly on that. I think that rural Alaska has, for most part, no tax base and does not have the luxury of going out and bonding and constructing schools when they see the need to do so. And as in comparison to other places that do have the that option to go out and bond for schools and incur debt on behalf of the state of Alaska. Those schools have different amenities, and I think that the philosophy in trying to bring some equity in school construction was one of the main points that fostered the House bill, and I think that through the process. The other process that was available for rural construction was that rural legislators had to try to get their priority ones or their schools that they felt needed to be constructed to either convince the administration or to take them out of their legislative allocation. And as a result, through the course of time, a number of schools in rural Alaska, the construction did not keep up with the construction standards and the number of schools in urban areas, and I think that through time, once the priorities of schools go through its course, and I think if you go through priority one through priority six, you do see some schools in Fairbanks as priority twos, and we will see a more equitable allocation, but it's a matter of time before everyone, I think, is on a level playing field, because we are changing the rules of the game in school construction, and there is going to be a difference in the type of schools that come up to priority one. And I would just beg the members of the body to hopefully take this into consideration while we are going through a phase of bringing everybody into an equitable situation. I'm not saying that House Bill 37 is perfect and may need some fine tuning, but those are my comments.
Thank you. Representative Navarre and Representative Copeland.
Yeah, I guess my only comment would be that whether or not it's a luxury to have been able to pay for part of the cost of constructing schools in your district while other areas of the state had theirs historically paid at 100%, I think you'd get quite a bit of disagreement. I'd be happy to work with the senator from Bethel on the ability to allow everybody in the state the luxury of paying a part of the cost of their schools as an equitable measure. I am not in disagreement with the costs or the building of priority one schools. I do have a concern about what both the departments and some legislators' attitudes are towards school debt construction reimbursement, which is schools that have already been built. And perhaps we could have, maybe we could get it from the department, what your feeling or philosophy is towards reimbursement of school debt versus the priority one schools.
Well, yeah, they're two separate issues, two separate programs.
It's all part of
the reimbursement of debt is for schools that are already built. The priority ones are for schools that need to be upgraded in order to be safe for the kids that are in them. So I guess I'm a little confused by your question. What you're asking me to compare?
We know what he means.
Yeah. Tell me.
At some point, I believe I can remember the name of our person, There was a suggestion in the development of the statute that debt for schools already built be included on the school's six-year request to the department as one of their priorities. That was discussed and never implemented, and did not end up being part of the legislation that passed. Yeah. So the process that we have only speaks to prospective schools, or schools that are still needed. And there, and the funding for the debt program is in a different statute. So we're constrained by that. And as far as a policy in the department, I think we have yet to hear from the new state board as to how they will direct us to lean in that regard.
What was the recommendation this year from the department with regard to school debt? What number?
For reimbursement. For reimbursement?
Yes.
I believe it was about around $129 million for full.
The department recommended full funding?
Oh, yeah, they always do.
If I might, Mr. Chairman, Mary Hoffman, Department of Education. The department did submit into both Governor
Cooper. Can I hold you up just a second? Senator Couture, did.
On the last point. I just want to state that 25 years ago, I wrote the school construction law because I found that under the foundation program, we hadn't covered school construction or extraordinary maintenance any place in the state. And it was, I went around to the districts when I was House Finance Chairman, and ended up in Naknek, where just wandering around as you do, I ended up in school there, and they had bonded themselves in that little town for all time to come, forever, for one school addition in Naknek. That certainly isn't Palmer, and it's pretty rural. I knew that that was wrong. Something else had to be done, so I got to looking into it. Sure enough, the foundation program did not cover school construction or extraordinary maintenance, which we mean to attest to. So we introduced a 50-50 match, so some schools could be built in the areas that had very limited tax base, it was a help to all of us. That whole area of local decision, again, is before us, and what's fair is a contribution. I can tell you this, as important as it is to have schools in the bush, and I voted for every single one of them, I do believe, in the rural areas and upgrading, and it is important, and it is a priority, maybe a key priority. When you have a huge urban decision-making group out there that essentially affect all the non-Bush area legislators and some of the Bush area legislators, they're going to have some system, they're going to develop it in which to get back in and get school construction. I know that. And so you've got to think that one out. That's all I want to say.
Ms. Hacklin, did you want to respond to the previous questions?
Very simply that the department did submit both to Governor Cooper and to Governor Hickel what full funding is for school construction, debt retirement, and these CIP lists. As you know, we're bound by what the governor does propose. Governor Hickel has chosen to propose the $108 million level at this time. The state board has not had a chance, really, to review the process and to make any recommendations other than what the governor has already proposed to the legislature. And we would have to direct you to the third floor.
Representative Boyer, you were on the list, and Representative Kopanen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. All of us remember the gnashing of teeth for at least 2 years going through the HB 37 process, and most of us didn't believe that it was ever going to work, and I guess we all get here today, and none of us believe it's ever going to work. But we bought into it because some of our districts convinced us that we ought to tie our hands and go with a process that might be equitable in the whole scheme of things, so some of us voted for that. But here we are at the table, we're all worried about continuing debt problems, continuing needs for health and life safety kinds of requirements in our own districts, and feel somewhat frustrated by this new regime, new process, because it looks skewed. Regardless of where you're at, it, the system looks like it isn't fair to the rest of us. And I'm curious what kind of total outstanding debt principal is out there for all the bonded debt. I mean, whatever the principal amount is. Can you tell me that? Just curious.
Approximately
$985 million. And, you know, it may be that the equal footing only comes when you defease that principal or roll the bonds or whatever, where the state maybe has the GO bond and repackage the thing and assume that responsibility for outstanding debt totally upon its own shoulders, and at the same time then bonding for the priority one or two schools. And I know for at least 8 years that I've been around here, the governors have all said, no more bonding, no more bonding, no more bonding. We don't want to do it as long as we get cash in the bank and all of that kind of stuff. But clearly, we don't have enough cash in the bank to pay off all of the outstanding debt. We clearly don't currently have enough will here to fully bond debt and buy into the new regime of funding all priority one schools or two or threes and so forth. And I'm not sure that we shouldn't take a look at defeasing. I mean, it may be the only way we can ever ultimately get off this thing where we continue to fight about what goes into payoff debt in urban areas and what goes into the emergency, in some cases, emergency needs of other districts that aren't able to pay. And then finally, I mean, we may have to say, as we did with the foundation formula, something that Representative Navarro alluded to, I think, is that there needs to be some amount of local effort, and we don't have a system that provides for that now. The urban districts and some of the rural districts can clearly go to the bond market and bond for 100% of whatever it is that they think is need, and that's 100% liability in the local community. That clearly can still occur under 37 regime, so, or 37 regime, but that's not a desirable thing from most districts' point of view, but maybe that we need to revisit this whole issue one more time.
I had Representative Copenham remaining to speak. I wanted to say we're going to lose our House people here. I think we're about at the conclusion of the overview for education. I don't see our university people. I think they're still flying around. Representative McLean and I will try to speak with the university here when and if they get in, and we'll try to reschedule, if possible, this week, subject to our mutual schedules. Representative Copenham?
As part of the comment, I know it grateful for the whole listing because it's a very sobering thought to realize that the immediate this year's needs for school construction and major reconstruction is $295 million that we have to look at, and that is a responsibility of the state one way or another.
Ms. Miller, Mr. Ryan, thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony and your information today. Senate House Finance is adjourned.
Thank you.